The night Kingston broke open. Nobody was watching the man with the microphone. They were watching Tom the Great Sebastian himself, the massive sound system operator who had turned outdoor dances in the back streets of Kingston into something close to religion. Yards packed, bodies pressing against chain-link fences, amplifiers stacked like altars to whatever God had decided that bass should be physical. But it was the man beside the turntables, a young Winston Cooper, with a way of talking that nobody had ever quite heard before, who would quietly change the architecture of music forever. This was the early 1950s. Jamaica was still a British colony, still under the shadow of a crown that had shipped millions into bondage, and now presided over a population that had built everything the island offered and owned almost none of it. Kingston was a city of compressed lives. The trench town yards, the back-of-wall tenements, the sufferers in the concrete warrens of West Kingston, who found whatever release they could on a Friday night when Tom the Great Sebastian wheeled his system out and the music began. In a world without nightclubs that anyone without money could afford, without concert halls, without radio that reflected what the streets actually wanted, the sound system was everything. And sound systems in Kingston were not entertainment, they were battles. The men who ran them, Tom the Great Sebastian, Prince Buster, Coxsone Dodd with his downbeat, competed for the same audiences, the same yards, the same reverence. They imported American R&B records no one else could find, hired local talent to keep the crowd energized, and measured their success in the roar that went up from a yard when they dropped a record the competition didn't have. You won the dance. You won the street. You won the street. You owned the neighborhood's imagination. Winston Cooper, who would become Count Machuki, understood that dynamic in a way no one else his age did. Born in Kingston in the late 1920s or early 1930s, the records on this, like so many records about the people who built Jamaican music, are uncertain. He grew up inside that world of sound system culture, absorbing it, studying it, learning how a crowd breathed and turned and surged. He had heard American jazz and R&B DJs on radio, men like Douglas Jocko Henderson, whose rapid-fire patter over records had become a signature of black American radio culture. The rhyming, the jive talk, the commentary that turned a music program into a performance. And he began to wonder what that would sound like if you brought it here, to these yards, over the records, Tom the Great Sebastian was spinning. Nobody had done it before. That is not a claim. It is a documented historical position. Before Count Machuki, the men who worked the microphone at sound system dances were essentially hype men in the basic sense, announcing records, calling for requests, keeping the crowd's energy from sagging between tracks. They were functional. What Machuki did was something else entirely. He began to talk over the records themselves. Not between tracks, over them. Rhyming commentary, improvised lines, jive talk that matched the rhythm and energy of whatever was on the turntable, call and response volleys thrown at a crowd who didn't quite know what was happening but felt it immediately and answered back. This was toasting. This was emceeing. This was, though nobody in that Kingston yard in the early 1950s could have predicted it, the seed of hip-hop. There is a detail from this period that lingers in the historical record without resolution. A question mark buried in the footnotes of Jamaican music history. What happened to the recordings? Because here is what the accounts suggest, and here the histories grow quiet in a way that demands attention. Coxsone Dodd, who would later become one of the most important record producers in the world, is said to have been aware of Count Machuki's talent early. And some accounts suggest that sessions may have been arranged, that Machuki may have been brought into recording situations at some point during his peak years, that there may exist acetate recordings, rough cuts, captured performances, somewhere in the archive of what Jamaican music produced in the 1950s and early 1960s. What became of those recordings, if they exist, has never been definitively answered. Tom the Great Sebastian recognized what he had in Winston Cooper early. By the mid-1950s, Count Machuki, The name itself carries authority, a kind of theatrical royalty that was deliberate, was working the microphone for one of Kingston's most formidable sound systems. Tom the Great Sebastian's operation was not a small affair. This was a serious enterprise, a moving spectacle that required transport, logistics, connection, and above all, a reputation strong enough to pull crowds away from the competition. And Machuki was part of what made the reputation. The dances themselves were an education in power dynamics. Sound system operators charged admission, they ran the gates, they controlled the flow of music and energy in a space that was, for those hours, sovereign, temporarily beyond the reach of whatever colonial administration presided over the daytime world. In the yards of Kingston, with Tom the Great Sebastian's speakers sending bass waves through the concrete, and Winston Cooper's voice cutting through the music with a line that made the crowd erupt, there was something close to liberation happening. Not in any grand political sense, not yet, but in the raw sense of a people hearing themselves reflected and celebrated and challenged in real time. Machuki's style borrowed from American jive culture. He had listened to those black American radio DJs, absorbed their rhythm, their vocabulary, but he filtered it through Kingston patois, through Jamaican cadence, through a voice that understood this specific crowd, in this specific yard, in this specific city. The result was something neither fully American, nor simply Jamaican, but a new hybrid, a language that belonged to the sound system stage, and nowhere else. He called himself Count Machuki, and the title fit. In that space, with that microphone, he was royalty. He moved between sound systems. That was the nature of the economy. Tom the Great Sebastian was the primary home, but the names of Kingston's sound system scene overlapped. Coxsone Dodd's Downbeat was the other gravitational center, and Machuki's reputation had reached there too. Coxsone was a different kind of operator, a man with ambitions that would eventually extend from the dance yard to the recording studio, who would go on to found Studio One, arguably the most important record label in Jamaican music history. A place where Bob Marley, Toots Hibbert, Burning Spear, and dozens more would cut their earliest work. But in the late 1950s, Coxsone was still in the sound system wars, and Count Machuki was one of the voices those wars were fought with. The sound system wars were not metaphorical. They were real confrontations, social, territorial, sometimes physical, between operators competing for the same limited audience. You dropped a record your opponent didn't have. You turned up your speakers louder. You had a selector with faster hands. And you had an MC whose voice could take whatever energy was in the yard and multiply it, throw it back at the crowd, doubled, make people feel like they were witnessing something historic on a Tuesday night in West Kingston. That was Count Machuki's function, and he was incomparable at it. What he created in those years was not just a performance style. It was a template. The specific techniques, rhyming commentary over a rhythm, call and response with the audience, the improvised line that captures something happening right now in this room, are techniques that would be recognized, decades later, by anyone familiar with hip-hop. The connection is not incidental. It runs directly through the Caribbean diaspora. When Jamaican immigrants arrived in New York City in the late 1960s and early 1970s, they brought the sound system culture with them. Clive Campbell, born in Kingston and raised in the Bronx, who became DJ Kool Herc, grew up with the aesthetic of the Jamaican dance hall as his template. When Herc began extending the breaks in records, when he started talking over the music in the parks of the South Bronx, he was doing something that Count Machuki had done first in Kingston, not as imitation but as inheritance, the natural transmission of a practice through a culture. The direct lineage of influence within Jamaica is even more traceable. U-Roy Ewart Beckford is perhaps the most important figure in the transition from Count Machuki's generation to the recorded era of DJ music. U-Roy would become famous in the late 1960s and early 1970s for his toasting style over pre-recorded rhythms, and he was explicit about the debt. He cited Count Machuki. He named him. In a music culture where influences were often absorbed without acknowledgement, where record labels took credit for discoveries, where producers received recognition that should have gone to performers. Uroy's naming of Machuki stands as a rare and important piece of historical documentation. It says, "This is where this comes from. Big Youth. Manly Buchanan came next, and behind Big Youth came Iroy, Dennis Al Capone, Dillinger, and eventually the entire structure of dance hall as a vocal form." Each of these artists was building on a practice that Count Machuki had invented in a Kingston yard before any of them were old enough to attend a dance. The philosophical DNA of their art, the idea that voice is an instrument, that the MC's role is not supplementary to the music, but co-equal with it, that the crowd is a participant rather than an audience. All of this traces back to Winston Cooper with a microphone in the early 1950s. But here is the friction that runs through any honest accounting of Count Machuki's legacy. He received almost none of the material rewards that his innovation ultimately generated. The sound system culture he helped build was a working economy. Coxsony Dodd would translate that economy into Studio One, which would earn significant money from significant records. The artists who built on Machuki's template would record, perform internationally, build careers, and Count Machuki himself remained largely in Kingston, largely in the oral culture of the dance hall, where memory and reputation were the currencies, and the ledger was never written down in a way that generated royalties or publishing income. This is not unusual in the history of popular music. The architects of foundational styles, the people who create the grammar before anyone recognizes that grammar is being created, often go without the rewards that accrue once the grammar becomes commercially valuable. The pattern repeats across blues, jazz, rock, hip-hop. The first person to do the thing is rarely the person who profits from the thing becoming a global industry. What Count Machuki did have was reputation. Among the musicians, the selectors, the sound system operators who built Jamaican music, his name carried enormous weight. He was not a forgotten figure within the culture he had shaped. He was acknowledged, respected, spoken of with reverence by people who understood what he had built. It was the wider world, the critics, the international music press, the institutions that wrote the official history of popular music that failed him, writing histories of hip-hop and reggae that began with the recorded era, with the artists who left a traceable paper and vinyl trail, while the man who had first done the thing was left as a footnote. Consider what it means that the founding figure of MC culture did not record at scale, in a history organized around recordings, because recordings are what survive, what can be sold, what can be cited, what music industry infrastructure was built to monetize. An artist who operated primarily in live performance is functionally invisible to that infrastructure. Count Machuki's innovation happened in real time, in yards, in front of crowds who were there and then dispersed back into their lives. There were no albums. There was no catalog. There was reputation and oral history, which is to say there was everything that mattered to the people in the yard and almost nothing that the music industry was equipped to recognize. Now recall that detail planted early, the question of recordings, because here is the curious thing. If Coxsony Dodd did indeed bring Count Machuki into sessions at some point, if acetate pressings were made during the height of the sound system era, those recordings might exist in an archive, damaged, possibly, or cataloged under the wrong name, or simply unrecognized in a collection of material that nobody has fully excavated. Jamaican music archivists have spent years working through the physical legacy of Studio One and other early operations, and they have found things, recordings credited to incorrect artists, pressings with no label information, sessions whose participants were never fully documented. The possibility that Count Machuki's voice exists somewhere in that archive waiting is not fantasy. It is the kind of unresolved historical question that Jamaican music history sits with regularly. The reggae scholars who have done the most rigorous work, Lloyd Bradley among them, have documented Count Machuki's role with appropriate weight. Bradley's Bass Culture, one of the essential texts on the development of Jamaican popular music, gives Machuki the significance he deserves. but the wider cultural conversation has been slower. The dominant narrative of hip-hop history has centered on American origins, on the Bronx in the 1970s, in ways that have sometimes obscured the Caribbean roots of the form. Acknowledging Count Machuki fully means acknowledging that the birth of MC culture happened not in the South Bronx, but in a Kingston yard in the early 1950s. And that acknowledgement carries implications about cultural credit, about origin, about who the world owes, and what has gone unpaid. The cultural stakes here are significant. Jamaica is a small island nation, a population of under 3 million people, a colonial history written in blood and sugar and forced labor, a cultural output that has been disproportionately influential relative to its size. Reggae went global, ska went global, dancehall went global, and the specific technique that Count Machuki pioneered, the MC's voiceover music, live, improvisational, in direct relationship with the crowd, is the technical foundation of one of the most commercially successful music genres in human history. Hip-hop is now a multi-billion dollar global industry. Its roots run through Kingston. What Winston Cooper himself made of this, what he thought in his later years about the world that his innovation had helped create, is not well documented. He was not given to public declarations. He was not writing memoirs. He was not the kind of figure who gave the interviews that build the record of one's own legacy. He lived and worked inside the culture he had helped build, and the culture knew what he had done, even when the outside world did not. The artists who followed him brought the toasting style into the recorded era. U-Roy in 1970 had 3 singles simultaneously in the top 5 of the Jamaican charts: Wake the Town, Rule the Nation, Wear You to the Ball, all of them featuring his toasted vocals over pre-recorded rhythms, the technique Count Machuki had originated. Those records changed the commercial landscape of Jamaican music, proved that the DJ's voice over a rhythm was not just a live performance technique, but a recorded form with enormous popular appeal. But the technique itself was 2 decades old by then. Machuki had built the grammar. U-Roy simply wrote in it. Big Youth brought Rastafarian consciousness to the toasting form, weaving spiritual and political commentary into the rhythmic chanting style, a development impossible without Machuki's original framework. I-Roy brought wit and verbal dexterity. Dennis Al Capone brought a harder edge. The tradition would eventually produce Yellow Men, Shabba Ranks, Buju Banton, Beanie Man, Sean Paul, artists who would carry Jamaican DJ culture to audiences on every continent, who would demonstrate again and again that the form Count Machuki invented had not merely survived but had grown into one of the dominant popular music forms on Earth. The question of credit and legacy in popular music is always complicated by the fact that the people who document music are not the same people who make it, and the people who profit from it are rarely the people who originate it. Count Machuki's case is an extreme version of that dynamic. He operated before the recording infrastructure existed to capture what he was doing. He operated in a context where sound system music was deliberately kept off official records. Operators protected their music by scratching off label information, keeping their sources secret, treating their vinyl as proprietary. The very nature of the culture he worked in was antithetical to documentation. And so the history of what he actually created in those yards, the specific moments of innovation, the nights when he first tried something, and the crowd responded in a way that told him he had found something new, these are largely irrecoverable. We know the shape of what he did. We know the tradition he established, and the artists who named him as its source. What we cannot fully recover is the texture of those specific nights, the way his voice moved over the music in a Kingston yard in 1952 or 1953, the way the crowd heard it, the way the world shifted incrementally as a new form of human expression arrived without announcement. What the record shows, assembled from oral histories, from the testimony of artists who followed him, from scholars who took the oral tradition seriously enough to write it down, is that Count Machuki, Winston Cooper, was the first to MC, the first to toast, the first to understand that the human voice, talking, rhyming, improvising, in direct relationship with a crowd and a rhythm, could be not just an enhancement to the music, but an art form in itself. The mystery of those possible recordings, whether acetate pressings of Winston Cooper's voice exist somewhere in the unexcavated depths of Jamaican music's physical archive, is, at one level, almost beside the point. His legacy is not in the grooves of a disc. His legacy is in every DJ who followed him, in every MC who rhymed over a beat, in every sound system selector who understood that the voice over the music was where the magic lived. It is in U-Roy naming him, in Big Youth's consciousness, in DJ Kool Herc's block parties, in every hip-hop verse ever spat over a breakbeat. If those recordings do exist, if somewhere in a Kingston archive there is an acetate pressing with Winston Cooper's voice, chatting over a Tom the Great Sebastian rhythm in 1955, and if they are ever found and recognized, they would be among the most historically significant music documents in the world. The first recordings of the MC form, the original template, the voice that started everything. But even without them, the case is complete. He was there first. He built the form. He handed it forward without knowing what it would become. And what it became was the musical grammar of a generation, then of a century. Was the world's debt to Count Machuki ever adequately repaid? Or did the culture that he built through the sound system dance halls and the toasting tradition and the endless lineage of DJs and MCs who followed in his footsteps consume what he created and forget who had first made it?